This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That is the exact wording of the Second Amendment to the Constitution. For decades, courts interpreted it as the rule that limited the extent of federal gun control laws. States, on the other hand, could do as they liked. Massachusetts certainly did. We have some of the most restrictive gun control laws in the country. But a major Supreme Court ruling this week could change all that. The court ruled 5-4 that the Second Amendment protection also applies to state gun control laws. The ruling came down on the same day a new Massachusetts law moved forward on Beacon Hill. Governor Deval Patrick has proposed legislation that would limit residents to one gun purchase a month. The future of that bill and other laws already on the books here is now in question. So how do you see it? Did the Supreme Court rule in favor of law-abiding gun owners and of their rights and of civil rights? Or could the ruling unravel Massachusetts laws that are supposed to keep streets safe? What's your take on the governor's proposal? Join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's start by unpacking the legalities here. David Frank is senior news reporter for Massachusetts Lawyers Weekly. Welcome to Radio Boston, David.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So from your assessment of the Supreme Court ruling on handgun ownership and the Second Amendment, how do you think it might affect the whole suite of laws we have here in Massachusetts about gun control?
Well, it's really interesting because now that the Supreme Court has said that the protections of the Second Amendment, at least in the context of the Illinois case, outweighed the state's right in terms of trying to protect against certain crimes of violence, it really does call into question some of the laws that we have here in Massachusetts, particularly some of the laws that deal with how weapons need to be stored inside a person's home.
David, the one piece of legislation that seems to be on everyone's mind right now and how the Supreme Court ruling might affect it is Governor Deval Patrick's proposal to limit the number of handguns a person in Massachusetts can buy to one a month. Now, this isn't an outright ban, but it is a limitation. So do you see that the Supreme Court ruling could actually have an effect on this pending legislation?
We're talking about legislation that has been sort of in the works now for quite some time during the Patrick administration. I think that there was a lot of effort sort of aimed at addressing the issues that have been before the United States Supreme Court and before the Supreme Judicial Court here in Massachusetts. So I'd be surprised if the law did not pass constitutional muster, so to speak, but I certainly expect challenges to be made to it.
You know, the thing about the Supreme Court ruling, which kind of leaves a lot of people's heads scratching, though, is while it's the 5-4 decision seems pretty clear on the fact that they are extending Second Amendment protections to state laws, on the other hand, the court refused to actually rule on the Illinois case in Chicago and in Oak Park, Illinois, at all. They've actually sent those back saying, you know, local courts, you deal with that now. So does that mean they've still left the door open in terms of the validity or constitutionality of some of these laws?
The court very well could have said that the state never has the right to pass a law that restricts a person's ability to carry a firearm. They didn't say that. They said in the limited circumstance of this particular Illinois ordinance, which actually prevented people from owning handguns in their home, it raises constitutional questions that the lower court's going to have to deal with. But in Massachusetts, while all that was going on, the Supreme Judicial Court issued a ruling in March that gave the state the right to pass a law that a lot of people said cut down on a person's ability to possess firearms in their own home. In light of the fact that the Supreme Court in the Illinois case has said what they said, there are a lot of legal experts here who believe, I think rightfully so, that the Supreme Judicial Court is going to have to take a second look at that particular law.
And David Frank, in fact, I went back and looked at that SJC ruling that you were talking about. And as you said, it happened back in March. And at that time, the SJC did seem to be using the Supreme Court as a guide, because basically they said, again, this is back in March, that at that time, the Second Amendment protections only applied to federal gun control laws and not state laws. So now that we have that completely overturned by the Supreme Court, and it seems as if state laws do fall under Second Amendment protections, do you think that we're going to see a whole new suite of lawsuits coming in to challenge what we've got here in Massachusetts?
I do, and I've reported on this issue in March and also the year before when the United States Supreme Court decided another firearm case involving an ordinance in Washington, D.C. itself. Lawyers in Massachusetts that were involved in the case, which is actually Commonwealth versus Runyon, the case that we're talking about, and others have said that they're waiting to see what the Supreme Court was going to say. And I fully expect that we're going to see several requests before judges where lawyers are asking courts to sort of reconsider prior decisions based on what the United States Supreme Court has said here. I mean, this is really a classic battle between the right of the federal government to enforce constitutional protections versus a state's interest in fighting street-level violence and in terms of passing laws that are designed to protect public safety. And what we have from the United States Supreme Court is an important decision where the court is essentially saying that the federal interest here outweigh some of those state rights. You know, it's going to come down to case by case determinations. The particular facts of a particular law are going to, you know, need to be brought before a court. But there's no doubt that lawyers are going to be walking into court with a copy of the Supreme Court's recent decision, and they're going to ask judges to reverse prior rulings because of what's now happened.
Well, David Frank, senior reporter for Massachusetts Lawyers Weekly, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, joining me now is State Senator Sonia Chang-Diaz. She's actually the sponsor of another bill pending in Beacon Hill that would limit gun purchases to 15 per year. She's a member of the Massachusetts State Senate representing the 2nd Suffolk District, which includes Dorchester, Jamaica Plain, and Roxbury. Senator Chang-Diaz, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks, Meghna.
Also with us is Jim Wallace. He's executive director of the Gun Owners Action League. It is the main gun rights association and lobby in the state of Massachusetts. Jim Wallace, welcome to Radio Boston to you.
Thanks for having me.
Let me start with you, Mr. Wallace. I mean, the Supreme Court ruling, it seems like if there's any consensus on here, the consensus is that it's opened the door to potential lawsuits regarding gun control legislation already on the books. So do you or your group plan to challenge any of the laws here in Massachusetts?
Well, I mean, the board of directors hasn't decided to formally challenge anything in court. I think what it opens the door for is for the legislature to actually reform the gun laws we have in Massachusetts to actually separately address the two distinct issues of civil rights and the needs for public safety. Goal actually was ahead of the curve on this because 2 years ago we drafted and through Representative George Peterson filed a piece of legislation called House 2259, the Civil Rights and Public Safety Act. And in it, what we tried to do was in statute separate the two issues as the United States Supreme Court has pretty much directed everybody to do from here on in.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems that that means that you're looking at potentially the legislature is where the action is going to be. But as a note to that, Massachusetts Attorney General Martha Coakley said this week in response to that Supreme Court ruling that she doesn't believe that the court's ruling upsets what she calls the balance between the state's firearms laws and civil rights of gun owners. So you see that as not being true, that there is no balance?
With all due respect to the Attorney General, I don't know how she can come to that conclusion because every major court action in regards to firearms, going back to Commonwealth v. Davis in 1976, and again, you just talked about Runyon this past spring, all of those cases were decided under the premise that a civil right didn't exist. So that means since 1976, all the laws, regulations, policies, and so forth have been implemented under the premise that a civil right doesn't exist. So I don't understand how one can happen and then the Attorney General say we've struck a balance. The other for the Attorney General's comment is that in the ruling, in the McDonald ruling, the court opinion actually hammered down on this so-called balance theory.
Mm-hmm.
They actually rejected that argument outright. So that, once again, the legislature needs to readdress everything and separate the issues of the civil rights, lawful possession, and the criminal enforcement issues.
Well, let's turn, Jim Wallace, ago. I'm sorry to interrupt you there, but let's actually turn to the legislator that we do have with us, Senator Sonia Chang-Diaz. I mean, just as a quick response to what Jim Wallace is saying, do you feel like there is no balance in terms of the gun control laws versus civil rights here in Massachusetts?
Well, I think we should, first of all, just step back and look at the Supreme Court decision. My understanding of this decision, and although I'm not a legal eagle, and I would defer to the Attorney General on this one, is that it strikes down outright bans. We do not have an outright ban on gun ownership anywhere in Massachusetts on the books currently, and the bills that have been proposed both by the governor and myself do not include outright bans. They simply do seek to strike that balance between the public safety needs of our communities and gun owners' lawful rights, under the Second Amendment. So, I think we do have that balance. I think that the bills that we're considering today we also maintain that balance. These are very, reasonable and again, balanced proposals.
Why is it that you feel the need to introduce legislation that's different but similar enough to Governor Patrick's about limiting the number of firearms that Massachusetts residents can buy every month?
Well, Magna, I represent, as you said, the Second Suffolk District, which includes many of the neighborhoods of Boston, including Roxbury, Dorchester, Mattapan, JP, South End, on up into Chinatown, Back Bay. There are several neighborhoods, but we have some of the most troubling instances of and rates of gun violence, particularly among our youth in this district. And so it's an issue that is extremely important to the safety of the people that I represent and to, not just the safety of those who are impacted directly, but by, the parents, the mothers, mm-hmm. the families who are touched by the violence as well.
Senator Chang-Diaz, let me just briefly ask you, yesterday, two people were indicted for the shooting of young Nicholas Fonby mm-hmm. Davis, the 14-year-old who mm-hmm. was murdered. But on the other hand, I also read that a number or maybe a majority of the crimes that are committed in districts like yours are done with illegal weapons. Mm-hmm. So how is it that limiting gun purchases would affect the legal weapons trade?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. And that is, I think, the question that's at the heart of this one gun a month provision that is the one of the main provisions of the governor's bill, and which in my bill would be similar, but it would be 15 in a year. And the idea there is to restrict the flow of legal guns to the illegal market, because it's true. So many of the crimes in our city and across our state are committed with illegally owned guns, but they start somewhere. You have to consider the supply chain. And in many cases, they start somewhere as legally purchased. And we also know that 30 to 40% of the guns that are used in crimes in Boston come from within our own state. So although we have some of the toughest gun laws in Massachusetts, there is clearly more work for us to do here.
Mm-hmm. Jim Wallace, I want to turn to you, turn right back to you in just a second. We've got a number of people, though, who want to join us in this conversation. Jared's calling from Wayland. Welcome to Radio Boston, Jared.
Thank you. I am a firearms instructor, and when I listen to the statements that come from the senator you have on the show and from Deval Patrick, I am just dumbfounded. As Jim Wallace can tell you, all firearm transactions in Massachusetts, illegal ones, are registered. They are all in a database at the Firearms Records Bureau. If one of my firearms showed up in the senator's district at the scene of a crime, it would take the police just moments to trace that back to me. Mm. And that would be a felony on my part if I had sold that to someone who was not legally licensed and if I had not registered the fact of that.
Jared, let me just ask you really briefly. I take your point, but on the other hand, as Senator Chang-Diaz said, some 30 to 40% of weapons used in crimes in Massachusetts still did originate here. So the registration doesn't even seem to be enough. Then why
are the police not arresting people?
Mm-hmm. Let's turn that question to Sonia Chang-Diaz, but before that, I want to get in another call here. Michael's calling from Framingham. Welcome to Radio Boston, Michael.
Thank you very much. Jared seemed to hit pretty much most of my points, so let me just change it a little bit. Looking at a more of a civil rights thing, why should a legal item be limited in the amount I can purchase? I mean, someone asked me once, why would you need one gun a month? I mm-hmm. said, well, I don't need one gun a month, but then again, I also don't need freedom of association. And I don't need freedom from the cops to come in to my house without a warrant.
Mm-hmm. Michael, thanks so much. I take your point, and I actually want to give our guests a chance to answer that. Sonia Cheng Diaz, they seem to be raising this issue that legal gun owners, law-abiding citizens, are the ones being targeted by these laws, and they're not the ones committing the crime.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, I think that's why we do need to strike a balance, and that's why no one is talking about out-and-out gun bans here. I mean, we've got to remember here what we're talking about is limiting purchasers to one gun a month, or in the case of my bill, 15 in a year. Mm-hmm. And although, yes, is it a limitation on, complete and total liberty? Yes, it is, and we should recognize that. But is it a reasonable limitation? When you consider the fact that in the last couple months, I have been to the funerals of three young people in my district under the age of 18, some of the young people who have been killed have been as young as 14, no gang involvement, honor roll students. We have got to do something here. And that's something that I really want to make clear, that when we consider striking a balance, there's got to be a balance on the other side as well when it comes to having a sense of urgency to addressing this problem. Mm-hmm. And I do want to be sure to answer the Jared's question, because I think it's a good one. And, because we do have laws on the books about making sales of legally purchased guns to an illegal second-hand buyer illegal. That's correct. But the fact is that there are prosecutions happening on that. Just last week, I believe, there was a Boston man who was sentenced for just this act of straw purchasing. So those prosecutions are happening. But we also need to consider the value of prevention, because once that sale has already happened, that gun is now in the hands of someone illegally, and maybe it's being used in a crime in my district or across the state.
On the other hand, I noticed that Justice Samuel Alito, who wrote the majority decision on the Supreme Court, said that there are times where issues of public safety may have to take a back seat to civil liberties. So an interesting decision, part of that decision there. Jim Wallace of the Gun Owners Association League, you've been hearing a lot from some of our listeners, and from what Sonia Cheng Diaz says, do you believe that any kind of limit, you're going to lobby against a limiting of gun purchases, I presume?
Well, let me just correct the record here just for a second. The decision that came out in McDonald v. Chicago did not address an outright ban. The decision was very clear in that all it did was incorporate the Second Amendment through the 14th Amendment, making the Second Amendment a civil right. It then sent the case back to the lower court and instructed them to now deal with this situation as a civil right. Now, the problem with the premise of this bill is you got to understand what has taken place already in Massachusetts in the past 12 years. In 1998, when the Gun Control Act was passed here in Massachusetts and put forth some of the most complicated laws in our nation's history as far as guns go, we had 1.5 million licensed gun owners. Since then, because of the persecution of lawful gun owners, the expense of being a lawful gun owner, the complicated laws that people can't understand, those numbers have been reduced by 85%. So we went from 1.5 million licensed gun owners in 98 down to now 230,000 gun owners. Now, if the premise of the governor's bill were to work, which means limiting what lawful gun owners could do, we should have seen a drastic reduction in gun crime. Well, we didn't. According to the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, in the same 12-year span that the numbers of lawful gun owners has decreased by 85% because of the laws, gun-related homicides are up 70%, and gun-related assaults are up over 200%.
Jim Wallace, I suppose that people could really split the numbers in any way. Some people say that that's exactly the reason why maybe national gun control laws should be even more strict, because in the case of Massachusetts, for example, it's the states that surround us which are shipping guns into Massachusetts. But we've got just a second to go here, so I want to give both of you a chance to just have one last word on an issue which we'll certainly come back to, because it's obviously not going away in this state. But Sonia Cheng Diaz, do you feel like the Supreme Court ruling is putting into jeopardy your efforts or the governor's efforts to put some kind of limitation on handgun purchasing in Massachusetts?
No, I don't. And again, on that, I would defer to the opinion of the Attorney General and the fact that this bill is a very reasonable, limited, modest parameter that we're seeking to put around gun purchasing in the state.
Okay. And Jim Wallace, in the last couple seconds, just last word goes to you on where you think this leaves gun owners and gun rights advocates in Massachusetts.
Well, hopefully the bill will go down in flames, because it's actually been coined as the Lawful Citizens Imprisonment Act here in Massachusetts.
By Jim Wallace.
Jim Wallace, he's executive director of the Gun Owners Association League. It's the main gun rights association and advocacy group in Massachusetts. Very glad to have you on today. Thanks so much for joining us. We've also been joined by Senator Sonia Chang-Diaz. She's a member of the Massachusetts State Senate from the 2nd Suffolk District. Senator Chang-Diaz, thank you as well.
Thank you, Megan.
Well, up next, how do I know if my partner drinks too much? We'll answer your questions next on a Love Letters segment. We'll continue the conversation after a break. This is Radio Boston. Thank you.